Dieter and Hutch feeling quizzical on a Friday. Don't know what's
going on.
Friday
morning, no less.
I love it. These 9 p.m. starts. Buddy, let me tell you, when you're up at 5, it ain't easy. This is my afternoon. We love doing it. We're having fun. It's a good time. Can I throw something your way right off the jump here, Jake Hutchinson?
Absolutely.
Obviously, the World Cup is coming to the Bay. It's coming across North America. Level of excitement varying pretty significantly. The Bay got like the world's worst possible draw. Yes.
Insanely bad slate. All tickets are $1,500.
And I'm fascinated by that secondary market. I take a look like once a week, and I'm like, who is going to these games? Like, are there a tremendous amount of Switzerland fans or Qatari ex-nationals that are amped to go see those two teams play? Regardless, 49ers, and this is according to Matt Maiocca, so we take it as gospel, released their offseason schedule, and we could have effectively deduced most of this, but May 27th, 28, 29, OTAs, June 1, 3, and 4. Here's the tricky one, and one that I did a little bit of side work on. Mandatory minicamp is June 9th and 10th. The 49ers facility is the stadium. Their main locker room is inside Levi's Stadium. A lot of the stuff that they use on a daily basis is part of the stadium. The practice facility is across a little corridor. Then they have the actual building where the front office and such works, and then their practice fields. There's a big garage thing, too, for weights. So it's all integrated. They're going to do a mini camp on the 9th and 10th of June. There is a World Cup game on the 13th at Levi's Stadium. I have reached out to people who might not know or might know, and they're like, it won't be an issue. I'm calling it right now. This thing's going to be an issue. Like, there's no way this isn't going to be a problem. FIFA doesn't, like, just let you come on in. They commandeer the whole damn thing. You should see the applications for these media credentials. They're like, what soccer games have you covered before? And show me the work. You think that they're just going to let the Niners have their locker room for the week? They're shutting that. It might be an issue the week before that. So I look forward to this absolute brouhaha that's happening in Santa Clara.
I mean, they get kicked out of their own facility for so much less, like just for concerts that, you know, they sort of own and run where they can't really do anything. And they're like, you have to hide. You have to pretend you're not there and you have to sort of creep around the building. I imagine it's going to be a problem.
I also want to add, if only there was somebody who was tasked in Santa Clara County with handling such events, like perhaps an authority of a stadium, but that person is literally non-existent. Every time we walk into the media room, there's just a door with a little label on it that's like Santa Clara County Stadium Authority. That door has never been opened once. I'm like, can I have the room? Like, it's a free room. Let me have it. I'll work in there. I can do some videos and stuff. So this should
I've
be.
I've always wanted to manage a stadium. It's always been my life.
Apparently, it's a no-show job. Actually, Brock Purdy, as part of the contingency in his contract, is in fact in charge of Levi's Stadium now. He gets a little extra bump. It's a little bit of aspiration level salary cap circumvention. Like, hey, we can pay you this much to be the stadium authority. I joke, but not that much. We do want to talk some football. Not that there's a tremendous amount of football happening here. Juwan Jennings, still unsigned. Two prevalent theories on this. One, comp pick stuff. Like, at this point, you kind of wait. Can you break that down for
there's,
me?
For context, basically the Monday, the day after the draft ends, is when it stops counting towards comp picks. Mm-hmm. So it could be something where everyone knows there's a deal in place. You would think there'd be a little bit of a rumbling if that were the case. Even a hint. There's been not even a whiff of a hint of it.
Well, I mean, Juwan Jennings is such a, you know, low-key, quiet, reserved guy. I mean, it wouldn't shock me.
In some ways, he is. In many other ways, he's not.
It would rumble out.
The tough part with him is, like, no one wants him as a number one wide receiver. You want him as a number two or a number three, and you're probably willing to compensate him, like, a fair bit for that role. He's probably like, well, I want to be a number one, at minimum a number two. And they'll go, well, remember how you were third in Juwan just as like a slot guy?
Yeah.
That's kind of what we want you for, because you're really good at that, and that would really help our offense on third down. So
sure.
I don't know what the offers are, but I imagine they're not 20-plus million as maybe were speculated. I think that's where it is. We'll see, and we'll see after the draft if it happens pretty quickly. But
There's also, and this is kind of going back to the Mac Jones of it all, there's also just a pretty prevalent belief that guys who can do it for the 49ers can't do it other places, at least on offense.
Especially athletically limited wide receivers.
That's right.
Like a bottom 10 percentile athlete at the position ever.
Seventh round draft pick, wonderful football player, but not everybody's running a Kyle Shanahan timing offense. He doesn't present any like future possibilities. Like, oh, if we just put him in our system, we can unlock something. Like, this dude's been unlocked. The door is totally ajar. And it's really just a question of, do you want to bring in somebody who can perform, is a solid player, is someone that you probably should want on your football team, is a bit of a quirky fella.
Yeah.
There's something there too. And like, again, you know what you're getting, and it's not terribly exciting to the point where the Niners are like, we're good. We'll just figure out something else. Like, we're kind of over Juwan Jennings.
He's kind of like a Quincy Acey, just a guy who's like a power forward.
Wow.
You're just like, wow, he's tremendous at boxing out. Just super physical, you know, provides a lot for us just in terms of energy, in terms of vibe. He does the dirty work. Like, he's going to make some plays that make us a winning basketball team.
Yeah.
We're not going to pay him all that much, but we want Quincy Acey on our team.
Yeah.
It's a little like that. It's not quite the right comp because Jennings has more upside, but
I don't know if upside's the wrong term there, Jake. Like, what is the upside? Like, he can produce.
The upside is
more.
A guy who's dominating on third down, who's going to move the chains for you, which is like pretty valuable, but it is not an every down role that you can rely on. It's like, hey, we're going to get you an advantageous matchup and you're just going to barely win. Every time, you're just going to barely win.
There's also this aspect of things where I like Matt Harmon's work over at Perception Reception or whatever the hell it's called. I get it mixed up, but he does outstanding work over at Yahoo and such. And he is kind of obsessed right now with the concept of converting guys into power slots, that there's a lot of wide receivers in this draft class. And there's just generally a lot of wide receivers in draft classes. There's a lot more draftable wide receivers now than ever, than I remember. I mean, you think about a guy like Ted Hurst, the Georgia State wide receiver. Like,
right.
5 years ago, Ted Hurst is a first-round pick. And now we're like, I don't know. Do you think he'll sneak into day two? There's just too many good wide receivers. And a lot of them are not built to play true X at the NFL level. And so, but they played X in college because no one actually has put a hand on a receiver in college in roughly a decade. So the idea of then converting them into power slot, this is something that the Texans have tried to do with like four or five different guys. A lot of teams are looking at it, especially as 11 personnel is still the preeminent set for most teams. Juwan Jennings is a power slot. Emphasis on power. And when you look at this draft, it's like, well, damn, like there's a lot of power slots. There's a lot of actual slots. Like, what do we need to pay
like
Juwan
Elijah
Jennings for?
When
we could probably just get one on the cheap. And if they're going to be a sub package player anyway, or just a third down guy anyway, like, I'm willing to roll the dice with a kid because he's going to cost a tenth of what that might be, maybe even a 20th.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a fair argument. I think there's a little bit too much optimism in terms of like converting guys into that role and teams thinking guys are more than that. And that usually sort of happens where you go, he's going to be able to play X for us. And then you go, oh, no.
Nope.
Okay. And then it sort of happens naturally. Whereas Jennings, I think teams are, I think part of it, I mean, the comp pick formula is a huge part, but I think teams are going to go into the draft and be like, all right, then we'll figure out if we need him. Like, we'll see how the draft goes, and then we'll say, all right, do we actually need to go get him? And then do we have more leverage to say, all right, here's what the landscape looks like, Juwan.
Yeah.
We will give you $7 million a year for 2 years to play. We'll guarantee you a whole year. to just play slot for us. But
he'll get a job.
He'll listen. I mean, it would be, he's an incredibly useful player. He's just not a high upside player.
And blocks like
not
a son
what
bitch.
He believes himself to be. Yeah, yes. and he blocked even. I mean, he didn't block that well last season, but that's because he was his he body was collapsing into himself like a neutron star, and he still played through it.
It's actually a true testament to how good Juwan Jennings is that we are now 10 minutes in and about 5 minutes into a conversation about Juwan Jennings, and we're not like both ankles, two shoulders, ribs, five broken ribs. How many? He did every week it was more broken ribs. That might also have something to do with this. The man is done and busted in so many ways. Yeah. But he's always had a higher opinion of what he should be paid than... I mean, as you should, right? I've never met an what employee out here
every
is
every wide receiver should have a higher opinion of themselves than is logical. If you don't, you're not going to cut it.
It's true. It's true. Wide receivers that don't have the confidence of a demigod are immediately expunged from possibilities of being good in the NFL. Now, there's limits, but it's. I mean, even like Jerry Rice, who was the hardest worker ever, like Jerry Rice. Does not see himself as immortal. He's never seen himself as immortal.
Which is why every single game he's like out there and he's like, let me play. Let me get on the field. They're like, Jerry,
you're 61
please.
Years old.
He's just running full speed across the entire field. He's like, throw me the ball. Everyone's like, all right, Jerry. But it's Jerry Rice. So what are you going to do?
If only corners could have covered Jerry Rice like cameras can these days. Jerry Rice, I mean, you will see. I literally saw him sprint towards a camera one time. It was incredible.
It's incredible. It's
a great bit before Niners games where you're like, where's the camera? Oh, there's Jerry. And then one time I'm sitting up in the press box and I'm like, oh, there's a bunch of cameras over here. And I see Jerry just sprinting across the field so that he could be part of like the Fox pregame B-roll of like dapping up, you know, Kevin Burkhardt or something.
Good for him. It seems like a lovely life.
You know what? When you're the best that's ever done it and legitimately has a strong argument for being the greatest football player of all time. I think I won't.
Especially not being like built like Calvin Johnson, too.
My God.
That's a huge factor. That was an interesting case in the Chuck Klosterman book where he didn't really make a good point.
Really, Chuck?
He had notions of an argument. Then it was sort of just like Jim Thorpe is the greatest to ever do it. And then didn't really make the point all that well.
What?
The one part of it that I do think is fair is like the greatest of all time. Like if you just have insane physical talent, like if you're built like DK Metcalf, you have to do much more to prove, like compared to like if you were built like Jerry Rice and you do the same thing.
I'll give you that. I do think that, you know, it's a nature nurture kind of argument, like natural ability can't be held against somebody at the same time.
Right.
I do think standards increase. It comes at, like the LeBron argument. Like LeBron's a perfect basketball specimen,
as is Puna Ford.
Correct
at defensive tackle. So it's tough because you're like Puna Ford's the greatest player of all time, but he is such a physical. He's so physically beautiful that
it's not
like...
fair, really.
Right.
So again, kind of in that demigod status. Like once we come back down to mortals. So I have no idea where we're going from this point on.
I'm just looking at Puna Ford.
Just a little Kumba. By the way, new Super Mario's movie out.
Ooh, how about that?
He is Puna Ford, the voice of one of those little mushroom guys.
The Koopas? Yeah.
The Koompas.
I kind of love that.
Pretty sure it's Jack Black or something.
That makes sense.
Donald Glover as Yoshi. Real thing. I thought it was a bit. I thought it was some weird esoteric comedy bit for a long time. And it's like, oh, no, it's actually Donald Glover. Fascinating. Where do you think Juwan Jennings ends up? I have one team that I can't shake. What comes to mind for you?
You go first. I'm pulling up.
Feels very Raiders. Feels very Raiders.
That was my first instinct. But I didn't.
Is there
know...
an alternative? Is there like a secondary option?
I mean, what about like the Raiders? Bucks? I know the Bucks have like a glut of wide receivers. They have Ekpuka, but like having lost Mike Evans, maybe you steal one from the 49ers. I don't know. I know they have like a lot of different wide receivers. Doesn't make a ton of sense, but like, I don't know. Maybe they try and play Ekpuka outside a little bit more.
Ekpuka did well at X when Evans was out.
Yeah.
there's something there. There's something there. I could see Atlanta coming in on the cheap and using him as a true slot because you already have London at X.
Right. It can't be the Eagles because there's no throws over the middle of the field. I was just saying if they trade AJ Brown, that could make sense.
I mean, the Titans is a team that's been bandied about, but when you're paying Wandale Robinson that much money, I mean, can you really get into the Juwan Jennings sweepstakes? And, of course, the Commanders.
Yeah, it would be funny. I was going to say if the Commanders are like, well, we'll take Jennings, not Ayuk, and then Ayuk can't find a place to play.
There's not much more ground to tread on the Ayuk thing, but, like, man, I do not feel for him. You do not, in fact, have to give it up for Brandon Ayuk for, like, playing his cards or anything. But this is an all-time bag fumble, like, legitimately all-time. I get that you're pissed that the Niners didn't trade you, even though you said, I don't want to be traded. I get that you're pissed that they looked for alternatives to you in the draft and that they were pretty open about other possibilities. Like, I get all that. You're also getting paid a tremendous amount of money. And then after that, like, your entire career is effectively in jeopardy because of your knee injury. And it just, man, something way off with that. And I do hope for resolution soon, just so that we don't have to keep wandering into the abyss of ambiguity that this whole thing is.
What about the Pats? I know they signed Romeo Doubs and all that, like, off the top of my head, I know they've got, like, Hunter Henry, but, like, I don't know if they have, like, the right type of slot that could make life easier for Drake May. Like, they have Doubs and they have Kayshon Booty and they've got a couple other guys, but they're more like move Z guys, some who can
Booty's,
play X.
Booty's a sacrificial X.
Right.
That
would
be a
Douglas
good.
Douglas is like, you know, it's like guys who are these little
they do
scatty.
The problem
X-ish
is they really like Pop Douglas, and Pop Douglas is like wildly effective at that slot third down job. Now, if you wanted to better establish the run game, having Jennings there might do it, but they're not. They play a lot of 12. Like they don't love using the slot. So
what about the Chiefs treating him as a pure tight end?
Yeah, real Griff coming in. I mean, they just gave Travis Kelce 3 more years.
Not
effectively
really
the same player right now. We'll get into one of those too. I mean, this is the other thing. Like, the Rams would know exactly how to use him.
Yeah,
they
especially with all their extra, like, their three tight ends thing, they'll be like, well, you're just that. That's the same position.
Can you imagine if you go 13 personnel and then make your one wide receiver Juwan Jennings on a crack block?
Right.
Like, now you're running.
That's just a goal line package.
that's some wing T shit right there. That's good stuff. I think that your point is spot on. There's a lot of reasons why he wasn't already signed. But the main reason why he's not being signed now is that teams are like, let's see what this draft has for us and if things pan out. And we'll
everybody's filled most of the desperate needs they have. And if they haven't, they're going, all right, we'll see what the draft does and we'll figure it out. Because we'd rather get a young guy and then the price will come down after the draft anyway.
Along those same lines, the Raiders know what they're doing at one, so they've already now sort of made their post-draft move.
So funny.
And
so
signed
funny
world-class bag getter Kirk Cousins, who I think is going to start week one for them. I've heard Kubiak saying that he believes in sitting behind. I'm not sure Mendoza needs that, but there might be 4 or 5 weeks where they just do it anyway.
It's going to be funny when they mind meld, and it's what's the movie with Demi Moore that not a lot of people saw? The Substance.
The Substance.
Where she sort of like pays.
Yeah.
To become like a younger woman and like shed
continue
her skin.
To explain the plot of The Substance. This
basically Mendoza and Kirk Cousins. There's a lot of like dorky, sharp, high level quarterback play where there's a lot of comparisons between the two already. There's sort of a mind meld sort of combination where they become one. And I think it'll be great. I mean, there's like a certainty that they both are just like living in the outskirts of Las Vegas, in the retirement community where my grandfather lives, just both sharing a house, just not going outside other than to play football, and that's it.
It's
or to go to church.
It could not be further from the legacy of Kenny Stabler, these two as the quarterbacks of the Raiders. What have the Raiders become? They got a bunch of guys who love Jesus and don't party, and it's like
a lot of gosh darns.
A lot of gosh darns. This is the real grift tells us.
You know, frankly, is probably exactly what you need to try and set the tone. I mean, it's not really gonna set a tone, but if Mendoza turns out to be really good,
sure,
and everybody sort of falls in line, it could work. It could work. I mean, it's such a tough place to get guys to focus and play actual
I'll give you that.
Football.
I'll give you that. You do need a goody two shoes. I'll give you that. There is an argument to be made there. It feels so spiritually wrong in so many ways.
And the Crosby in the locker room with Mendoza and Kirk Cousins.
Sir, this is a non-smoking locker room. You cannot currently smoke your cigar in this locker room. There's signs right outside the front of the door. And the worst part is it's Raiders fans who have made, because there's been nothing to cheer for in two decades. Raiders fans have made this sort of outlaw mentality their entire persona. And Raiders fans, above all else, have decided football team is personality. And a lot of guys call it, you know, my old lady over here. The amount of old ladies at Raiders games were incredible. Not actually old, just guys who referred to my old ball and chain as their old lady.
Very sad.
How they're going to find a way to handle the most, you know, goody two shoes. Can I sell you a Bible, boys? In the history of football, as their quarterbacks.
It's not like
Ashton Dentschy isn't a nice guy, too. I don't think he's like a preacher or anything, but like seems like a pretty chill dude.
I want to see what the Raiders version of the Calgarism is, with like guys who...
doesn't exist.
Like the total antithesis of the whole Raiders vibe. I want to see how that gets packaged up, if anyone's clever enough to thread that needle and meme it properly.
The other thing, too, is, I mean, this is maybe a larger social commentary. Maybe I'm going Klosterman and just doing the concept of an idea here. But, like, we have lost a lot of the core identities of football teams. Like, with Tomlin leaving, I'm not sure what the Steelers are going to be. Right? It feels like they have now given up on that sort of connected tissue from Chuck Knoll to Mike Tomlin. And now they're like, let's just wing it year by year.
Stopped it, given up.
Kind of. I guess we'll lease from now on. And then, I mean, the Ravens, we'll see with mid. I do think that there's enough there, like enough institutional knowledge there, but you lose Harbaugh, and so you don't know what that is. Is like the only true culture in the NFL, the Jets and the Browns.
That's a very, very interesting case. I would argue the Cowboys.
Because
it's become a different thing than it used to be, and now that is its own culture that's very specific, that's very Jerry dying empire that has been dying for 20 years, but now that is the empire. Where it's just
very America coded.
Just listen,
truly America's team.
Just, it's, you know, it's a Walmart that's been there forever. Everyone's hanging out, tailgating in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're at the strip mall where there's like one store that's left. That's the Cowboys vibe. But they're still like, we're still here. But I think you're right. There's not a lot of true identity. Like the Jets, being the Jets is pretty strong.
I mean, they don't want that identity, to be fair. Like that identity,
no.
It is, I think the Browns lean into
identity.
It a little bit.
I do think the Browns lean into it. I think they go, what are we going to do?
You can make the argument that the Packers still have one.
I agree.
In that, but the Micah Parsons trade kind of messes with that. This, you know, we have one quarterback. We keep our quarterbacks. We trust our quarterbacks. Kind of that connective tissue from, you know, Favre to Rodgers to now Love. Again, it's a little loose. Draft and develop.
I think the Broncos still have it a little bit. It's a little different with Peyton and his energy, but there's...
What is the Broncos' identity? There's nothing connecting it to John Elway these days.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's
not going back to Dan Reeves.
Yeah.
It's just a thought. And by the way, the Niners, like, they have their own identity now. of Shanahan. Like that's an identity. That's a 10-year-old identity.
Yeah, it's tough because the Saints still do, but because of their whole cap thing and their whole roster dynamic, it's
yeah,
now
that's
a different
just ownership.
Thing.
Yeah,
but it's still like the one true. I think they're the one true like football town. Or, I mean, college football town for an NFL franchise, where it's like the whole city is truly rallied around them. Green Bay is too.
That's
I would
a whole
say,
state.
But,
I mean,
but it's yeah, but it's like the New Orleans is like truly one of the few franchises, if only that like.
But
the Saints
like,
are everything there.
But I pull it back. It's like when you think about that team, you can't like imagine how they play. There's not an established baseline of what it is they do. The Niners have that under Shanahan. It's wide nine. It's zone defense. It's, you know, killing Christian McCaffrey or Debo Samuel, one or the other. It's a quarterback who is never going to be respected. Like, that's their identity. Like, that's the Kyle Shanahan team. The Rams have one, but the Rams are a new thing in so many regards. The Chargers are trying to establish. I'm not going to go team by team. Seattle, they changed almost entirely. Like, yes, defense, but that's nothing from what the Pete Carroll Seahawks were, even with the same GM. It is an identity. Like, when you think about college football, there are just certain things. And this, by the way, is something that's changed
like
pretty dramatically, too. But, Iowa. Like, you know,
like
Iowa's
never have an offense. Don't you even think about asking us to have an offense? We won't. We refuse to. We don't know how, and we refuse to learn new things.
Iowa's identity is punting. That's their identity. USC's
like,
identity
man, we're
is...
we're going to play good defense and maybe return a kick for a touchdown, which will be our only touchdown of the
By
game.
By the way, you know what? That's a great transition, Jake.
Yep.
Let's pull me back before we get any further and stranger, and let's talk about day three draft crushes. Let's start with Caden Wiejun.
Let's do it.
That guy's awesome. He's fantastic. Yeah. He's clearly going to be a great returner at the NFL level, both punt and I think kick, too. I know that kick returner has, you know, maybe you want a little bit more heft. I don't care. I want that guy with the ball in his hands as often as possible. I'm not sure if he'll be a good wide receiver, but... Doesn't really matter.
There's some slot upside that we'll have to see. We'll have to see. But I think it's like once you get to round seven, I'm spamming Caden Wiejun just as a.
You don't think that like at one? You don't think at 139 for the Niners that they could do Wiejun?
Buddy, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you where once we get to round four.
Yeah,
not a clue. I think it's going to get so weird so quick. Guys who I think will be clear undraftable talents will go in round two. I think.
Oh, you got to give me a name on that.
Because
that's a pretty specific.
Let's see.
You might have been speaking out of turn. You can pull it back, but round two, undraftable.
Maybe not round two. Round two. I'm just saying. I think people will not know how to value it. Let's see. Like, looking at my board here.
Yeah.
No, probably not round two, but maybe round three.
Like, is Drew Aller draftable? Does he deserve a draft grade?
Yeah, but it's not a high one.
What about Carson Beck?
Yeah, but they're both like clear day three. I think I literally only have four quarterbacks who could make an argument that they shouldn't go.
Somewhere
day three or after, and that's Nussmeier, Mendoza, and Ty Simpson. And Ty Simpson, I'm kind of even iffy on. Oh, and my guy Baron Morton.
Yes, you do love Baron Morton for some reason. I'm just going through. I'm going through Matt Miller's seven round mock here. Like Skylar Bell, wide receiver out of UConn, is he draftable to you?
Definitely, but I tried to. I tried to like. Get myself as hyped up as some people were. I don't know. It just didn't. There wasn't enough suddenness. Like he's really shifty, but everything was a little loopy. There's not enough like straight line sharpness in his route running. Had really good hands and was
how
super.
About Emmett
explosive.
Johnson at Nebraska, the running back.
Ooh, that he could be my Caleb Johnson of this year's draft. Where people are like,
I don't care for him.
No,
I don't
didn't.
Care for Job.
Yeah.
He's mocked as pick 100 here.
Emmett Johnson?
Emmett Johnson.
Yeah, I was. He fights for every yard, but like got tackled too easily. Like it was too long. I just didn't really enjoy what I was watching at all. Like he's kind of a pass first back, which is a weird thing to draft. I was not a major fan. Chris Bell's a good one.
Here's the thing. Like I think Chris Bell is draftable.
No,
I just think
no
he'll
question.
Be overdrafted. I think he'll
no
be
question.
On. What's your number right now, by the way?
On Chris Bell?
No, on draftable players.
I have to put it into a system to figure that out.
I mean, just guess.
I would guess my number is about 150-ish.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's I'm usually more optimistic about draftability, and I think I'm at like 125.
Yeah, it's not a high number this year. I think where the Niners are at is kind of a good spot. Yeah. You can't force yourself. I mean, they're going to take someone that they're going to take a lot of people that we're going to go, I don't know who that is. That's how it always works.
This year we're going to get to day three and it's going to be like some guy from Mount Union goes 124.
Because what always happens is you go, ooh, there's this guy that I really like. And then they go, and then you're like, I don't know who that is.
Right.
I watched so much tape. I didn't watch him. I don't know who that is.
Going to end up with like the Ohio Bobcats corner. Going 164.
And they always do the thing where they're like, we actually really know really well. And the guy turns out to be nothing. And you're
right.
Like, well,
you never
maybe
hear that
a
name
reason.
Again.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. This guy's good. The fact that I'm really scrambling right now and vamping to make sure that we can fill the time and try to get, you know, a modicum of concept.
Right.
Like, no, it's fine. It's fine. This is a good pick.
Yeah. All right. Let me give you a guy on my list.
Okay.
That I really like.
Yeah. These are day three guys that we like.
Evan Bernstein, which is spelled Bjørnstjerne.
Like the Bears?
That's right.
Cool.
Like, actually, exactly. Really understand. I think he's like a borderline day two guy. Like, he's awesome.
Talk me into him.
He is tremendous.
How so?
He could definitely win a job day one. He's like a battler who's got a little bit of meanness. Even when he like loses initially, like he re-anchors and recovers extraordinarily well. So good at sealing defenders and getting second level. Had a key block again and again and again for Northwestern.
Yeah.
He had a snatch trap move that was pretty consistently where he put guys in the dirt a lot, would get to their shoulder pads and just throw them down, would offer help so effectively to his teammates.
I'm looking in my mind's eye. Trying to remember because I've watched
60, former Jackrabbit from South Dakota.
Right guard?
I think so.
I think he did both, actually.
I think you're right.
The issue that I'm having is I'm thinking about Tiedemann's, that's the left tackle on Northwestern,
Turner.
Right? Turner. Thank you. And the tape that they would have at the temporary Lakefront Stadium, which is just a gem, and maybe we have to make a pilgrimage before it's gone to the temporary Lakefront Stadium. There's just poles in the middle of the All 22 film. It's like all 18.
Bad.
It's so bad. And I don't know directions, but the end zone, one of the end zone cams blocks the left guard for every snap. It doesn't matter what hash you're on. Somehow, the camera is panned to where it's always blocking the left guard. So he could be the best player. I might not know. I might have gotten him mixed up. Maybe they had to move him to right so that he could get drafted so that people could see him.
Yeah, it's rough tape. Like, physically just trying to parse through it is maddening.
How is it possible in the city of Chicago to have the two worst All-22s in all of football? How is it possible that high school teams in Texas, Florida, and Southern California can have better All-22 tape than the Chicago Bears, which are operating on some like weird fifth dimension?
That's part of the Bears' identity, is just like no stadium ops, just like, hey, can somebody's nephew go out there and throw some sand on the field before this thing starts? There's
Park
a
district.
Giant pothole in the middle of the field.
Just like, unbelievable.
If you've never been to a Bears game, quite literally, their grass is so, so bad that before the game, they just have a couple of guys who may or may not have done the job before. It's abundantly unclear, that are just going out there with a bucket of sand and going,
yeah, there.
So I don't know.
Soldier Field is literally owned by the Chicago Public Parks Department, and they manage Soldier Field because the Bears and their cheap ass owners, whose value has gone from literally birthright from George Halas to now worth $6 billion, they're like, why would we spend money? Number right. keep going up. We have no self respect at all, and we don't care about any of this. So. Yeah, those are literally guys who work for the Chicago Parks Department, and I get a little bit of overtime on Sunday. I go down to the Bears game, go put some sand down, then I go and have a couple dogs out of the back of the concession stand in 122. Yeah. Linda hooks me up with some hot dogs.
And I love going every time. The press
box has the exact same heating environment as a New York City apartment. Which is right. like the heat is on and it is 122 degrees, so you have to open a window.
Yeah, it's yes, 100. Where you literally are like, is my leg on fire?
This is the only time this has ever happened, right? And I'm a tired boy these days. Quick one.
Oh, I know. I remember this story. Yeah.
So I have two. Young children that don't sleep. You know, Lottie was up this morning at 4 being like, I'm hungry. And it's like, you need to go back to bed. And also, like, I'm screwed because up at 4, it's like, how am I getting back to bed? And then waking up, you know, 2 or 3 hours later to get everybody out the door. I'm not complaining about it. This is my fault. Tried to get it in. This is what happens. And so when Lottie was first, my 3-year-old now was first born, the Warriors played that one play-in game against the Kings and got absolutely smoked.
Right.
And at the end of the game, I'm in, and I think I have this right. I legitimately don't remember. It could have been another Sacramento game. Actually, it was a great Sacramento game. I think it was like a first-round playoffs round. It was an incredible game. Steph goes off. Yeah. Insane. And we're in the post-game press conference in Golden 1 Center after. It's like 10:30. I'm running on 4 hours sleep max.
It's also like a two and a half hour drive up there.
2.5 hour drive up there. I still have to do the drive up there. And Steve Kerr walks into the room right behind me. And I, at that exact moment, let out a huge yawn. And Steve kind of chastises me in front of everybody for being like tired. And I can't be like, I have a young child. So that's, it haunts me to this day. Like I can't yawn in front of Steve anymore. The only time I've ever fallen asleep on the job, Soldier Field, Monday Night Football, Bears, Vikings, this was 2017. I had flown into Chicago, like red-eye flight, had a bunch of stuff, was out with old friends because I was younger and had friends then. And man, I get into that press box and it's a 95 degrees outside. Yeah. And it's like 3 hours till game time. And I just went down. And I wake up sometime in like the third quarter. No one touched me. No one talked. I knew people in the press box. They're like, let him sleep. Let him go. Most embarrassing.
Gotta let a sleeping bear lie.
What the most embarrassing shit ever. And now I refuse to go back to the Soldier Field press box because I'm afraid I might, my body will be like, we could finally rest.
That's beautiful. I mean, there's something to that, like, sort of baking in the sort of recycled air situation where that just the heat, it domes around you and envelops you, and you're just like, this feels nice.
Sleeping on top of a laptop. So that's the Chicago Bears. That's the Park District. How about I give that's you another beautiful. Name?
Sure.
I'm all in on Oscar Delp. I'm all in.
Okay.
This is maybe my tight end too. I love the grit. I think there's a lot more plus in the pass game than he got credit for. Having Lucky on the other side, who can't really block all that well, though I do think there's upside there.
I do too.
In the ability to block. Like I think either of these guys would be great. I think
Lucky just physically doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, he's like a baby giraffe out there. He has no idea how these limbs are working.
And sometimes it does work and it looks pretty
sweet.
Great.
But Delp knows what he's doing. And I think that, like, baseline for Delp, he's a Charlie Warner, right?
100%.
He knows how to angle block. Like, he's there. He can get his face into it. He's big. He's strong. He's not the biggest or the strongest, but he's quality. He's a good football player. But then you see him sometimes on these routes and coming over the middle on like a little 5-7 yard dig, and you're like, damn, that's pretty good. Nothing special, nothing crazy, but just wildly competent. And when you think about some of the better tight ends in the NFL, when you think about like a Sam Laporta, or when you think about a TJ Hockenson, and we're not comparing him to a George Kittle or a Travis Kelce, who's an unbelievable route runner, or at least was. Like, but when you think about these other guys who people are like, those are good tight ends, like, what particular skill set stands out to those guys? Nothing. They're really competent at a lot of stuff. That's what Oscar Delp reads to me. He just looks like someone who's going to come in and is extremely competent at a lot of stuff. If I do remember correctly, he, much like Pat Spencer, was a very high-level lacrosse player. That kind of stuff matters to me, too. Maybe that's the new, like, he was a wrestler, so now he's a we get lacrosse players. So there's a lot of, open-field athleticism. And as someone who actually, like, will turn on lacrosse every now and again, lacrosse is just a game of one-on-ones. And you have to find deft ways with people backpedaling to make them not come with you. So I like the concept of how that would translate when actually put into a more pass prevalent offense at the NFL level. Because again, he just was their fifth option in the Georgia offense, because you had three great wide receivers, or at least high level, five star, whatever, wide receivers. And then Lucky was a better receiving tight end than him. I'm very much in on Delp. I'm surprised that there hasn't been more buzz about him as kind of a day two option. I would take him on day two. I would take him in round three in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I think he's my number two tight end, frankly, and in a pretty shitty tight end class.
I actually think it's a decent tight end class, but not at the top. Like, there's
nice meaty middle.
Yeah, well, in terms of the top, I'm talking about the perceived top, where you go to the top of the class and there's Sadiq, and then there's a huge drop-off where it's like Trigg and Claire and Stowers and Jolie, and you're like, that group I feel a little weird about, and it's a little bit of sort of the guy the Rams got who also played at Oregon, who is much longer and is sort of like a move tight end.
Terrence Ferguson.
Yeah, Terrence Ferguson. And there's a little bit of that, and I think there's something a little bit more to Claire. I am not a Trigg guy. I'm not either.
I do think in an offense that's willing to use him kind of like the Chargers used Aronde Gadsden last year, there's something there, but he doesn't even have those hands.
It's tough because he was like used as an insert blocker, and you're like, why are you using this guy whose limbs are as long as his entire body length as a fullback? This doesn't make any sense. The Big 12 should be removed from the planet. Moving on.
I mean, Jake, every time we talk, it's like, dude, these college coaches need to be tried.
Like, what are we doing? Like, you look at the skill set your player has and maybe adapt. And they're like, no, we run this system. It's like, well, maybe you should not. Maybe you should adapt. I'm going to go with a true day three tight end.
True.
On the back of that. Will Kaczmarek, the second Ohio State tight end.
Yep. Just blocking tight end.
Outstanding inline blocker. There's a lot of people who like Derek Moore out of Michigan. I'm not one of them. I think he is. I'm not saying there's nothing to him. I'm saying
you're not lattoing him.
Never seen a player rage harder than Derek Moore more consistently. If you watch the tape against Ohio State, Will Kaczmarek makes him literally rage every single snap, to the point that he's losing it. He gets penalized just because Kaczmarek is blocking him into the sun every single play. He literally pancakes him. It's astounding.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he's that much more than that. He's a little bit like what Luke Farrell should be in terms of size. And you always go back to like the same
also
school.
Ohio State. Yeah.
But it's, and I don't like that.
They have a type.
I default to that.
They
but he really can drive people. And I think as an inline blocker, which is kind of rare in terms of the tight ends nowadays, like, I think if you want a guy that actually plays like traditional tight end, like as an extension of your offensive line, he's really capable of that. And he occasionally lunges. I want him to be better in space. He's weirdly like Max Clair's much better in space, and Kaczmarek, sometimes you put him out in space and he kind of lunges. Sure, whatever. But in terms of like a guy who can pull and do every single thing you want in the run game and even hold up one-on-one in pass protection a little bit.
Yeah.
I think he's an awesome day three pickup who just has a lot of strength and anchor and drive in those like short areas that not a lot of tight ends have, especially coming in draft.
Look at how much money Charlie Kohler got. Look at how much money Luke Farrell got. Blocking tight ends matter, especially when you think about how many teams, not the Niners, heaven forbid the Niners ever do this, want to do a jumbo set on first or second down or in short yardage.
Yep.
Like jumbo sets are a big deal. The Bills are probably going to keep doing six offensive linemen. Ravens do a lot of six offensive linemen. Here's a wild idea. Go get yourself a sixth offensive lineman that's actually not an offensive lineman. So they don't have to report eligible.
Catch the ball. Right.
In theory, yeah. And by the way, like you don't throw it to him unless no one covers him, which happens a lot. And now, you know, now you're playing on the, if there was somebody out there who could line up and be your sixth offensive lineman, a la George Kittle or whatever, but also be your best receiver, he'd be a first round pick. Like that's just the cut and dry of it. Or a fifth round pick that totally panned out in a crazy way. Like everyone's looking for the next George Kittle. There will be no more next George Kittles that are fifth round picks that turn into these incredible things because everyone knows what they're looking for now. And so the idea of just taking the blocking tight end, I would much rather have that than have a guy who can't block because that's just a shitty receiver. Yep. And I would rather have the shitty offensive lineman because most offensive linemen these days are shitty. So I like that one. That's a really good one. What number would you put on? Like, does he play for the Niners in any way as the draft is currently?
You could definitely take him with one of those fourths, depending on who's available. I do think better tight ends will be available at that slot. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a world where like Dallin Bentley is there.
Yes.
There's even a world where Delp is still available. Mm-hmm. Like tight end it's tough to predict. But I think if there's like Bentley available, I think if there's Delp. The Texas kid injuries is interesting, but after that, I think Kaczmarek, if he's available, I think you'd feel fine taking him at the end of round four.
Let me throw, I got two more for you. We've talked about this guy a lot. I've never gotten his name right once. Keyron Crawford out of Auburn.
Okay.
I see it, baby. I see the vision. DJ Durkin didn't see it, which is obscene. And they dropped him into playing linebacker repeatedly. But this kid's got crazy first step. He's long. I think he plays with really good functional strength on the very rare occurrences where they allowed him to do that. I can try to be glass half full for the first time ever in my life and be like, imagine if you had someone who was like 6'5", 260, and you're like, you know what we need from him right now? Play linebacker. That's pretty good athleticism. If that's something that they're defaulting to, kind of in the same way where, you know, Steve Wilks is out there and he's like, we don't need a free safety. We have Fred Warner and he's going to drop back 25 yards at a time in Tampa 2. Like there's something there. And if we're talking day three, where you should, in theory, get either really good production and it makes no sense as to how they did it, or makes no sense why they didn't have production because they're such great athletes. Yep. I like, especially for a team that's looking for a sub-package pass rusher, doesn't need to do anything but get quarterback on third down when we're just pinned our ears back and we're going. I think Keyron Crawford shows up at camp and you're like, oh, damn, how'd this guy end up in the fourth round? He has that, and that's what I really like. I like this sort of extrapolation where you watch this guy and you're like, you put him in a camp with a strict role, a strict job, how quickly does everyone be like, oh, damn, how do we get that guy in the fourth round? Kind of like an Upton Stout last year, where it's like, damn, that guy was in the fifth round? It's like, yeah, well, they were moving him in a bunch of different ways. It didn't make any sense. Now he has a very specific job. He can get coached up on that specific job. Like, yeah, he's going to be pretty good because he looks like he could be good at that job. Keyron Crawford looks like he could be a really good pass rusher. I don't think he's going to hold up all that well against the run, but I do think that he can maybe give you what Bryce Huff gave you last year, maybe even a little bit more because he does have the frame. I really like him, and that athleticism is something that you can't teach. So he got done dirty by his coaches at Auburn. Had he transferred and gone and played for a real goddamn football program, he'd probably be talked about as a second round, maybe even fringe first round pick right now. But I can see it now where we show up at rookie minicamp and it's all, you know, guys in shorts and just doing drills, and you're like, who the hell is that guy? And it's like, oh, that's Keyron Crawford. And then it kind of never fades from there. Just somebody who outperforms because they are asked to do less at the NFL level than they were ever asked to do in college. And get this, they get good at the thing that they're asked to do because they were able to do so many things competently at the college level. Imagine what you could do with some focus. So I like Keyron Crawford a lot.
I'll give you one last one before we take some questions.
I want to throw one more at you after that.
No. I'm going to get... Listen.
You're done. I got it. Yeah. Lay it on me.
Jayshon Barham from Michigan, who's like an LB edge, almost like... Okay, again, it's tough when you make comps because you try and... You're going off like the most readily available recent thing. So like if I'm going to be sort of not quite accurate about my comp, I would say very, very, very discount Arvell Reese.
okay.
Like not, it's not quite, again, he's different because he's much bendier, but it's like a linebacker edge. I think he's more of a true edge. He's thin, but he's long. He's bendy, has crazy speed and bend, a little princely Uman Mielen-ish. But he's a little bit more direct, and he converts that speed to power despite a thin frame really well. I'm a big fan of him. I just think he's like going to be a potentially outstanding 3-4 linebacker who somebody is going to get a steal with in like round 4 or 5 even.
With the Niners, do you think as like a – and this is something that maybe we haven't talked about enough they're going to want to do a lot of odd man fronts this year. A lot of five-man fronts. It's something that they've tried to do the last 2 years. That has not worked out all that well. But now that you have Raheem in, it's like pretty clear that they wanted to do it because Raheem was doing it elsewhere. Now Raheem is here. Feels like something they can do. So guys who would qualify maybe as a 3-4 outside back, like is he somebody who could qualify on that one?
I agree. I think he could work. Again, I don't know that I'm going to love it. I mean... I'm not going to love him as like a true edge setter.
No.
That's not his role. But I do think at a certain point, as the draft gets weirder and as like that top group of edge rushers go and you go, okay, well, the top group is gone. Is Gabe Jackus there? No, somebody took him at pick 42. He's not there for us.
Man,
then
Jackus
you get into
good.
The rest of it. I think someone like Barham and Crawford where you go, we just want somebody who has like pure explosion.
Yeah.
Pure burst, and we're going to say it might not work. It might be a total mismatch with our defense. It's not going to go. But we also run a wide nine, and we say get off the ball and fly, and we're going to say these guys can fly. And it's not typically what we want, but we kind of have everything else the rest of our front. We have the size in the front and the power of guys to like eat up gaps and eat up space. And now that we have Dre Greenlaw back, and a little bit of physicality at linebacker, maybe we trust a little bit for guys to scrape and clean up behind him.
Yeah.
Maybe you say, like, I don't care if this is a fit. We need somebody that's got a little bit of juice, and I could see that being a fit.
Again, we're kind of going back same place, but these schools do have a type. I was a little bit stunned last year when one of my guys, Josiah Stewart, went to the Rams. But there's a lot where you're like, Josiah Stewart's kind of just an outside guy. Well, you can put him at weak side defensive end, teach him how to do that, build that up. But at the same time, if you're going to do the odd man front, you're going to go to a five-man front. Or you can just have, you know, the Rams get a little weird, right? They can mix it up on the front. They're not as dogmatic about how they run their fronts because they have so many good players. They mix in them. Donald, they wanted him at one or zero tech a lot. But... Josiah Stewart ended up just being a defensive end for them that sometimes would stand up as a fifth guy. And as the season went on, he was a third round pick. As the season went on, he got more and more run. I really liked him. I thought that it was a bold play by the Rams. I thought they drafted him maybe a round or two too early, but it looked great. It looked great. And there's a lot of similarities there. And I wouldn't be shocked if maybe the Josiah Stewart mold, as alleged, is something that the Niners are looking for, especially when you consider, okay, at 27 and 58, like people are talking like R. Mason Thomas at 27. It's like, dude, hang out in the fourth round. I got 7 R. Mason Thomases for
100%.
So just what do we
do? Just
doing?
Wait, just like take a cheaper spin at the wheel. Don't spin the wheel early unless it's somebody with like undeniable where you're
totally.
Like, If it's like Kendrick Falk, where you're like, there's just too much there, and it might not work, but it's so clear and undeniable that there's just that raw talent and unteachable size.
Yeah.
Then you have to. But a guy that's like short armed, and you kind of have to squint to be like, yeah, it could really work or not. I don't know.
Don't be drafting one trick ponies at 27 or even at 58. One trick ponies are for day three. Or you can move up if you feel like everyone's going to get in on them and move back up into round three because you have the ammunition.
Yeah. Who's your last guy?
Well, I'm gonna throw two, but I'm going to be really fast about the first one.
Okay.
Along the same lines of shows up in camp and everyone's like, damn, how'd they get that guy? That guy's really competent and good. Markell Bell, the Miami offensive tackle, he is not going to be special. He's not going to be but like, I can imagine Markell Bell just being a starter in the NFL for like 7 years in sort of the Colton McKivitz mode where everyone's like, is he good? And every team is like, yeah, like he is good, but fans have no idea what makes him good because he'll give up a sack to speed rushers every now and then. Markell Bell is just a competent pro, and I'm not as concerned as others that he won't be able to translate because he's a big dude. He's 6'9", he's like 350, he's a hulker. I'm not as concerned as it seems the draft Knicks are about his ability to handle NFL speed off the edge. Because I just think that his first step is really solid. When he gets his hands on you, it's over. And I think with all these projections early, maybe this is a personal thing. I want to counterbalance that. Give me somebody who I know is just going to be fine. Just give me someone I know is going to be fine instead of playing this, you know, Monroe Freeling who puts out awful tape, but like he could be incredible. So you're going to waste a
I don't know that Freeling's tape is awful.
I really don't like it. When we're talking if we're talking, you know, second or third round, no, it's good tape there. We're talking top 10 pick now. Doesn't make any sense. What are we talking about? What are we doing? What's going on here? So I can't get it out of my head. So I just like Markell Bell. The guy that I had been searching for this entire process.
Yep.
The guy who made me feel something as a day three defensive lineman. I always have one. I always find one. I can't find my running back this year. That guy on day three who I'm like, oh, I love this guy. This guy's going to be great. But I always find a defensive tackle. Don't worry about it. I'll get there, Jake. Is Nick McBarrett out of South Carolina.
Oh, I wasn't telling you to speed up. I'm just saying I am on the same page. He is.
Dieter, say it. I got to talk about this guy.
Getting stamps from both of us.
I love him. Hands, heavy. Nose, for a football. Motor, running hot. Burst off the line, way better than you'd think. Like, really, really solid. Can be a gap splitter of the, like, just shy of the highest order at the NFL level.
Yeah.
I think he had a great...
tremendous force at the point of attack. Like,
big boy. And it's so funny, I watched a lot of South Carolina. I watch a lot of SEC, more than any other conference combined, frankly. And South Carolina, I thought, had like three first-round caliber defensive linemen on the team this year. So talented. To the point where, and I knew Nick Barrett. Like, I talked about him a bunch. I talked about him apropos of nothing during the season on this show. I didn't think he was in the draft. Because no one else had mentioned, like, you are part of some sort of, like, I hadn't gotten down to the part of the chart yet, whatever. No one else was talking about him. I thought he wasn't in the draft. Apparently, people just don't like him. I'm not saying take him in round one, but if you wanted to take him at 58, I'd be down. Like, I it's a stretch, it's unnecessary, but I'd be down. My goodness, he is fun to watch. It makes me feel a lot of the same ways that CJ West made me feel last year, if I'm being honest, and I think he's better.
Barrett's a specimen. I love it. I love it. I mean, I had very little, I don't even know. I'm looking through my notes. I didn't even really have anything that I was hugely disappointed by. He was just so disruptive.
Yep.
Was able to take double teams, had tremendous balance, quick
hands.
He
can take two
strong
like nobody's
hands.
Business.
Awesome player. Awesome player.
He's great. I would say 127 if I had to circle something right now.
Definitely.
Like, ideal draft, immediate A+. I'm going to grade everything on the curve.
And he's a guy that ends up being there, too. It's also like you check and you're like, oh, yeah, he has no, like, in terms of physical, like, limitations. No. Like, yeah, he's short, but, like, Weight's great, solid, fine arm length, fine hand size, decent, like above average broad and vertical. Like where there's nothing where you're like, okay, am I missing something? Is he like a really bad athlete? No, he's not. No. He's not an outrageous specimen, but he's like
football player.
Totally fine to slightly above average.
I love him. And of course, this will now be the guy who gets taken in the second round and everyone's like, who, where, huh? What? Remember, mock draft database didn't say this.
God, can we just briefly, before we move on to questions, talk about the guy, Lee Hunter. What was that? Why? He was like being mocked at the end of round one, and I just cannot, still to this very second, cannot wrap my head around what people thought or saw or went in any way why that was ever a round one talent. And then it's like, oh, he tested terribly. Yeah. He can't move. explosion.
You want to hear a bet right now? You want to hear a bet right now? I don't think Lee Hunter gets taken until the fifth round. I think that he is entirely a product of a couple of good reps at the Senior Bowl against shitty competition. Not to say all the Senior Bowl competition was shitty, just the one-on-one reps that he got there were made to make him look good in a lot of ways. Not that that was a conscious decision, but it really worked out for him. I'll just bluntly say it. He got lucky at the Senior Bowl. And everyone's then like, wow, what a disruptive force. He's 300 and something pounds doing one-on-ones against, you know, 290-pound centers. Right. It was always over. Because we have a lot of light centers in this draft class, and that's what he was going up against almost exclusively. By the way, you watch him against a true guard, doesn't go as well. And then you watch the tape, and you're like, where? What? Huh? I mean, I see him. Can't miss him. But there's nothing there. And it's not like he's the one where if you were really trying to be nice to him, be like, well, those defensive ends, they wouldn't have gotten free if it wasn't for Lee Hunter.
Yeah.
Didn't say that once. And we've watched more Texas Tech film than anybody in West Texas over the last couple of weeks. So, like, the idea that this guy was there, he's not getting taken until round five. He'll get taken because at some point, some team will be like, I don't know, we got to throw one around. Who do people say is good? and then they'll be like, oh, Hunter was well mocked. It's not fair, but this has a lot of Shedeur Sanders on it. Not in the same realm of where it's some media conspiracy thing. It's just early impression, first mock draft, and then because mock drafts are all just plagiarism machines, where it's like, oh, what did that guy say? I have to copy that. Because we're not actually gathering intel. We're just guessing, and we need to make our guesses look plausible compared to other people's guesses. So the plagiarism machine. He keeps falling, but he won't get all the way down because at some point be like, well, someone had him mocked in round one. Like, I can't have him going in the fifth round. I'd look like an idiot. And then guess what happens come draft time? He's going to go in the fifth round. That's my guess.
Yeah, I had him as like a round four. I wouldn't be shocked if he goes after day three. All right, let's take
some questions.
Vice, why not just drop Garendo in as a receiver, get some use out of this? We talked about this.
He's an awful route runner.
He's just not a good football player, I think.
If I need to find a way to make Isaac Garendo useful, I do think that he is specifically built, if he could just hold on to the damn ball, which is a ridiculous ask and will never happen, he'd be so good on kick returns. It's exactly what you want.
They want him to do that.
You want weight and speed for kick returns. He gets a running head start. All he has to do is see one hole and go to it. Like, that should be awesome, and yet he can't even do that. So how am I to...
Little bit of the Trey Lance, like, maybe a nice guy hesitation
there. Oh, just doesn't hit the hole.
Yeah, just not so much willing to sacrifice every part of his being. Maybe that's a harsh criticism. Maybe that's overreaching.
I don't know if I've ever picked that up, but clearly the tape shows it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that was something we talked about. It's just, there's so much to like in terms of the athleticism, and it just doesn't, I don't know, maybe somebody else will figure it out. But
no, they won't. He's going to be in the UFL. You look at UFL rosters, and it's just a lot of guys like Isaac Garendo. It was an idea.
Somebody will take another shot.
I know a team. I know a team who will probably end up bringing him in. Isaac Arendo, you are a Washington Commander. Attach him to Brandon Ayuk. Let's get real weird. How many players can we get on the Brandon Ayuk trade and just
make it a make it a walk. Sixth rounder next year?
Dilute the formula. It's like, oh, it wasn't a Brandon Ayuk trade. It was an Ayuk and Braden Willis and Isaac Garendo trade and Nick Martin. Like, all of these guys were in on it, and we're taking back all Nick the players Martin. They don't want.
I know.
Here's Luke McCaffrey, and I don't know.
Yeah. It's going to get strange. How did this real-life version of me...
Me and my
last
giant.
Time the 49ers picked up a veteran safety, Gibson did well. Oh, well. Is Simmons... I don't know what this question is asking.
Okay. Let's try to reverse engineer it. Simmons. So this is, I would presume, Justin Simmons, the safety.
Justin Simmons.
Okay. This came from... Now I got it. Apparently every episode I have to absolutely shit over on somebody in the media space. This was Dante Whitner, who apparently has a podcast now because no one will hire him to be an analyst anymore, saying they got to go do this. They got to go do this. And because we have nothing else to talk about, because no one actually does their work on draft prospects, they just take what other people regurgitate. And again, plagiarism machine. This became some sort of a storyline. I have told Dante this to his face, so I have no problem saying this now. I don't think Dante knows what he's talking about. Just because you played in the NFL and were a very good player in the NFL doesn't mean you have tremendous insight into what's going on in the current NFL. And I've had it out with him a bunch of times on a bunch of different subjects, and I am undefeated when it comes to getting into it with Dante Whitner in public forums where we have differing opinions. Still undefeated, and I'm going to remain undefeated here. I do not think Justin Simmons is coming on a trade to the San Francisco 49ers. That's not how they go about their business. And in fact, I would say that safety is leaning, as it stands now, to be a position where they wait and see and maybe make a trade at the deadline, or maybe just wait a year, because there's a lot of young talent and they feel they have a true secondaries whisperer for the first time since Wilkes, frankly. And even then, this one, they trust a hell of a lot more because he's, you know, part of the family, quote unquote. I think they're gonna see it through with the guys that they have. Maybe add one in the draft. Maybe add somebody that's already been on the team or played for either Raheem or Kyle before in, you know, cheap free agency, something to that effect. But I do not expect a splash at safety. It would have already been made.
Yeah, I'm with you.
How did this show start? Yeah. Do you remember?
No. Chances the Niners overreach for a wide receiver who doesn't work out and avoids improving OL 100% guaranteed. It's not how that word's spelled, but
it's also not 100% guaranteed. Like, no. Will the Niners overreach for a wide receiver? Like, this would be a year where I would guess that to be less likely than most. Not to say it's impossible. And then everyone keeps saying improve the offensive line. It's this concept. It's this panacea for the fan base. And it's like, okay, how? Because here's the deal. Robert Jones is pretty good. This is good. Thank you, Kawachipto. Simmons is a free agent. So they would have already done it. Would have already happened. Unless he wants to come in on an uber cheap deal, it would have already happened. And maybe that happens on the uber cheap deal, but that was not the way it was presented by Whitner, at least in the very loose research I did for that subject. Back to this. Where do you need to improve the offensive line? Like, where?
Left guard.
Left guard. I'm actually kind of I'm in on Robert Jones. I'm in on him. I think he's good. I think he's a good player. I think you're going to be just fine with him as your starter. That's not to say he can't improve. I agree. But is some rookie going
to
beat this guy out?
To be able to say that.
I don't think a rookie's beating this guy out. Also, you have to take into account, coaches determine who plays. Robert Jones, from just tape, don't know the guy, haven't done any intel on the guy. But just the tape, this guy clearly knows what's happening. Like, the one thing that stands out is, like, this guy's head's on a swivel, and he does not look panicked. He looks like he is in full control of the situation and looks to be the guy that everyone on the offensive line is looking to for the answers. You don't think coaches are going to like that? So if you have competent on-field play and you're a coach on the field, Like, you don't think Chris Forster is going to be down with that? Like, I think that Robert Jones is probably going to be their guy. Not to say that they can't do the draft, but, you know, I'm also, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, you got to take a guard at 27. No, you can't. We're not going to break down fifth-year options again, but, like, you really can't. That's terrible team building.
Yeah.
And there's not a guard worthy of it.
Real quick, yeah, I think they will draft an offensive lineman. Chances they overreach for a wide receiver. I think this is based on people believing Pearsall's a pure bust.
They don't.
That's your opinion. I disagree. It's also injuries, which can turn out to be a bust because of injuries. But year three is sort of a deciding factor.
100%.
Also, the last
fifth-year option picked up at the end of the year. Or not.
The Niners also drafted early. The first one is Dante Pettis. That was a bust. But they drafted Debo and they drafted Ayuk. Those both worked out. So I think people have this idea that they overreached for wide receivers. Like Danny Gray was a third-round pick in the COVID year. That was whatever. Knew that probably wasn't going to work out, but the upside was high. Jordan Watkins was a fourth-rounder. Like, I actually think they generally have a decent job on wide receivers. And know what they're looking for. O-line, yeah, they're very stubborn. We've talked a lot about how they value O-line. They don't want to pay for guards. They won't pay for guards. They will. They did draft Aaron Banks in the second round, and I do think if the right guy's there, they will think about it.
Same with Pooney.
Agreed. Pooney was a third-round pick. Has worked out.
Let me pop these out real fast just on the same level. I think Brendel needs to go. We can't talk about Brendel needing to go anymore. The tape is way better than y'all are noticing. Everyone says Brendel's got to go. He ain't going this year. You can draft a back, you can draft his successor, but he ain't going.
I think they need to have a succession plan in place this year.
Toth is the backup center as it stands. Backup center is Toth. So there it is. And then this is a good point from Cowachipto, like Robert Jones, Miami, and then the Cowboys sign him. He's got an injury. He doesn't play last year.
Yep.
Cowboys.
Neck, which is worrying.
Which is why you get him cheap, and maybe it doesn't work out. Injuries are different than a bust. It can all be classified as a bust, but injuries are different than a bust. Busts are guys who are out there and can play but can't. So at least as I view it. So Cowboys, really impressive offensive line situation. Their offensive coordinator is a former O-line guy, about as good as it gets. It would be great if I could remember his name off the top of my head. I can't. He's unbelievable. He's outstanding. Point me to the tape. The tape's available to you at all times, and every show is archived here on YouTube. Feel free to scrabble it. What do we got?
More from Sunday Living. Chances not. We already read that one. Mason Garendo, then James. I can't wait for the 49ers to draft a good right. I mean, I don't know that they're good running backs. Mason was better than those, but like there's been no proof with Garendo or James being good players. Another one, I use a cancer. Niners have issues cutting ties. Is saying cut Trent? No.
No. Well, first off, he is cut at the end of the year. It's a contract void thing. Can I quickly? I got a good email, my work account, along these same lines of like, this guy sucks. Just let him go. Is talking about Trent Williams. So
I understand exasperation, but also that's not really how that works.
Right. And also we've been through this before. So, let's all pretend like we've done this before, huh? The question was, there's a lot of nonsense in here. But could you tag him for next year? And the answer is no. You cannot tag him because he has contract voids. So you can't tag him at the end of the year, which is an interesting thought, which is he makes this money. Now he has these void years. Just tag him. Now he has to come and play. There's, whatever. But you don't actually lose him. You tag him. Because of void years, you can't tag. Then the question is, does he count for comp picks? That's actually a tricky question. The answer is yes. Void years do count for comp picks, but not if you read the CBA verbatim. If you read the CBA verbatim, it says that the contract has to be completely off the books. Later in the CBA, it says that void years that automatically hit don't count as actual void years when it comes to comp picks. So the CBA literally contradicts itself in its language about comp picks for Trent. None of this is going to matter, but it is something that I had to figure out this week, and I figured I'd share with the class. Like, he's going to sign. He'll sign. It's not going to be an issue. Void years are void years. It's all good.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, I think that's we. There's a couple more.
Oh, let's give a shout out to Adam McKee. Sorry, yeah, Adam, sorry you're right. That. I did not update the shout out list. This is your shout out. It's right here, right now. We're isolating you out single, and you will be added to the list. I didn't want to do it in real time, because heaven forbid we don't focus. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
See you, folks.